Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma can understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome, welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown with you, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. And when I say we have a full house, I mean it quite literally. The bus is full, standing room only. We've got a great show for you, and it's going to be for 3 hours. We're here until 6 o'clock. We'll be talking about a web design contest around survival lost in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, coming up this hour, along with a whole bunch of other things. So stay tuned to the Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown here at the beginning of a three-hour show. Lots of fun things happening. We got some great guests lined up in our first 2 hours, and then starting at 5 o'clock, from 5 to 6, it's just you. That's right, your questions coming in to us at 800-859-0957. That's starting from 5 until 6. In this first hour, we've got lots of things to talk about, but first let me welcome in our team of experts who are in studio again. I got the whole crew here this time. It's a very special holiday edition. Gary Baker.
We have not only our crew, but a huge number of folks that are going to be on the air with us. It's a three-hour show. It's going to be a great show.
A lot of fun. And also Mr. Ed Rudell. How you doing, Eddie?
I'd rather be shopping.
Oh,
no.
Online?
No.
Online?
No, real shopping. I've done all my online shopping, and I am ready to hit the roads.
Now, what does that mean for you? Like Micro Center and Best Buy and
the
hardware stores?
All the dollar stores, yeah.
All the dollar stores as well. Well, Cal Carson is the other person here, the man who speaks both languages, PC and Apple. Good to have you with us.
I'd rather be back in Bedford Falls with Mr. Potter, just sitting by a Christmas tree and having hot chocolate.
Get this guy on stage for one play, and you can't get the thespian out of him.
And I will tell you that's right. It's like we've now got actors all the time. So welcome.
All the time.
Welcome to
It really is great to be back here. And I tell
you, it is a wonderful life.
I'm going to get Zuzu's petals, and I'm going to head on back out there and have a good time.
I will tell you that a friend of ours was actually in Hollywood, and she was one of our neighbors, and she was an actress. And I said, wow, that's really great, Jenny. Her name is Jenny Moss, Jenny Patton Moss. And I said, gee, it must have been really fun to be an actress. Were you in anything that I ever heard of or saw? And she said, well, there are a few others. And I said, no, anything that I might have seen. She says, well, it really was a wonderful life. And I said, I know it was a wonderful life. Was it, were you in anything? She was actually Jimmy Stewart's sister-in-law, and she got off the train.
Oh, yes,
Virginia,
the young woman who had
Virginia
married.
Patton.
I'll be darned.
And so she was trying to tell me that.
Years ago, I interviewed Zuzu, who was, I think until recently, she was quite along in the years, but wonderful lady who usually would gather around for those repeats of A Wonderful Life. Well, it is A Wonderful Life here today, but it's been a kind of a wild week on the Internet. Did you guys, were any of you on Google when it crashed this week?
Well, just for a few minutes.
About
right?
half an hour. About
was
half an hour was up and down.
Okay.
I happened to be on Chrome at the time. Now, normally when these crashes happen, they affect the mail systems, right? And Gmail went down.
Right.
This time it was something, however, that affected the Chrome browser. And I was playing some music in Pandora, and it kept on shutting down the browser. Start the browser up again, and it would be gone. Went on like that three times in a row, and finally I said, the heck with it. I went to Safari.
Really? That's just is something I didn't realize. So
yeah.
The Google Chrome browser will not function if the mothership is not available?
Well, there are apparently some things that happened in the background where there were some syncing issues. Cal, did you read any of the details?
Probably
on that?
The Google updates, if you have that automatically enabled.
Those constant updates that are flying.
Yeah, there was something that happened in the syncing process that, and it's a rare occurrence, actually hit the browser as well as the mail. But it's, you know what it does? It brings to my mind, though, guys, is that we're depending on the cloud more and more for more things, whether it's Apple's Siri, her voice coming to us from the cloud, or storage, or applications now in more and more cases.
Did you happen to notice on the front of your computer the little light for the webcam? It went off when Google went down, and then it came back on when it came back up?
No.
Okay, just wondering.
They're watching me?
So they're really not watching you. Yeah.
But seriously, what do you think about that in terms of this kind of the thoughts? We've seen this happen with a number of different services.
This goes back to technology.
You know, it's like your automobile. It does run out of gas occasionally. You know, it doesn't run forever. You got to do some maintenance.
But it would be like being on a special fuel like E85, for instance, and suddenly that goes away, you know, and you're not able to use the other fuel.
No, it's just there was a problem. You just reboot your automobile, you reboot the computer, and everything's fine.
And then you also have to remember, you're getting this stuff free. So you're getting what you paid for. Yeah. Now, in industry, and I'm sure Gary, you can definitely attest to it being, you know, in IT and that sort of thing, you pay extra money to have redundant systems after redundant systems to keep that going like that. And Google probably has those sort of things too, but evidently there's a hole in redundancy somewhere.
It's technology.
Right? Well, and
we'll have one of our guests. Is Don Welsh, and he's the president of Merit, and we'll ask him because they are a nonprofit ISP, and they work with a lot and been here from the very beginning. They managed NSFNet back when before you know the public internet started off.
I'm just wondering how safe we all are in depending on so many things being in the cloud. Whether, like, for instance, Google Chrome documents.
You see, this goes back to the discussion we had a couple of weeks ago when I said I think it's always best to have some localized backup as well as the cloud because you never know what's going to fail.
Well, I'm thinking of even the applications that run on the cloud. Like they're talking about running Office, for instance, out of the cloud. And
have a localized version loaded on your machine so you can keep going.
Well,
anyway.
You better have. What I'm saying is you better have something locally on your machine. Although with Google Chrome, wasn't it Chromebook now?
Right? You know, there's a lot of sales and specials right now where you can get Chromebooks for dirt cheap. I mean, the low
but they
technology.
Run entirely in the cloud, don't they?
And everything's got to wonder about the impact of those. I mean, it's like having a dumb terminal in the 70s and early 80s.
Right.
And if the mainframe went down, you're staring at a blinking screen with a cursor.
Which is essentially what happens to some people today. I don't know, Gary, you're right. It's technology. The wrinkles will be worked out.
They go down a lot less often than any company I know. So
that's true.
Well, speaking of the future of technology, we're going to be talking with some young ladies who, through the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, have been involved in some web designing. So I think we're going to be kind of getting a picture of the future of the web in just a minute as we're talking with some of these winners of the web contest there at the Internet Advisor. And we've got so much more coming up here. So please do stay tuned for a great program. Thank you once again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And, you know, if you're just catching us for the first time, we have a website, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, where we put our show notes. That is, it tells you who's on the program with us. And also, it also has some live links off to different things, like, for instance, the organization that sponsored the three young ladies who are with us in studio in a web design contest. That's the Michigan Council of Women and Technology. And, Gary, we have had a wonderful, long relationship with this organization, both of us having daughters, and I know you and the other guys in the program as well, very interested in young women being involved in technology.
That's right. You know, as we've seen more recently, that the number of women attending college has gone up and now has a higher percent of women in college than men, we're seeing the number of women getting into technology fields going down.
Yeah, and it has been a strange...
And we need the diversity.
Absolutely.
I don't want to tell you that I think that in many cases the women are, you know, smarter, more dedicated.
If you're wise, you will.
And certainly paying more attention to detail from an execution standpoint, it's wonderful. But that's probably true, actually, when I think back to my career. And and I think we'll just have a richer experience the more we can encourage young women girls. Well, and in fact, Girl Tech, I see you put up here first hour girl power.
I did.
And that's the whole idea, isn't it?
It certainly is. As a matter of fact, we have three young ladies in our studio with us. They participated in the Michigan Council of Women in Technology's contest they had. Excuse me, there's a frog that's invaded here. They were in a contest for a web design, and the theme was survival lost in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Let me introduce them one by one here. Rachel Xiang, am I right?
Yep.
Rachel, you can say hello, wave at me, but you got to speak because this is radio.
Hi.
Rachel, where are you from? What school?
I'm from Canton High School. I'm a senior.
Good. Canton High School, and you were in the advanced division. Also with us is Annie Fu.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Annie.
Hi.
Where are you from? Which school?
I'm Salem High School, which is right next door to Canton.
Okay, very good. And then we have Jackie Kruppish.
Hi.
Jackie, how are you doing?
Good.
Holding up the east side, right? Representing the east side from?
Lakeshore High School.
All right. Now, ladies, one of you lead off. Tell me about this. Maybe, Rachel, you can start.
All right. What was
the nature of the contest? What was the challenge that was put out to you for this contest?
So basically, what we had to do for this contest was create a website like with 4 to 5 pages that basically told a story about what we would do if we were lost in like Michigan's Upper Peninsula in the forest, and how we would survive and how we would use 3 items from a wicker basket to basically fight off bears and things.
Wow. No, so then what did you have to do with it, Annie? Did you have to create a story online then, on the webpage?
Well, there's an writing element, obviously, because you have to fill content, but we tend to focus more on the actual design of the website.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we focus on, and then the content is secondary to us, but we obviously created a story, and it's not... I wouldn't say it's a great story, but it's there.
So the trick is not just the story, but it's how you present the story, how you draw people into it, right? So why don't you tell me, Jackie, how you did that with your design?
My design, I like incorporated the whole survival theme by taking pictures. Like, I went with my sister and took pictures in an actual like forest and put them on my website. And I just like talked about how the items in the basket helped me survive.
Okay, okay.
So now, did you use any special technology? There's website development tools out there.
We just did it off Notepad, like a blank document.
Okay, and then how did you get that up onto your site? Did you use FTP or?
Yeah, we used... MCWT gave a tutorial on how to upload our websites using FileZilla and like an FTP account and stuff.
Right. I use FileZilla. I know it's very good.
Now,
I'm curious. What platforms do you work on? A Mac or PC? Curious.
Currently PC.
PC. Oh, currently PC. Dad or mom around looking for Christmas presents? Okay. Yeah. Annie, what do you work
PC.
On?
PC.
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 Well, now that's interesting because very often it's thought that Macs is what people use for this kind of artistic design, but you're working at a PC. Now, I'm just curious. What are Gary asked this, but in terms of oh no, the master. Cal just came in, he's taking his Mac, and he's going to go home.
Well, that was the only one in the studio.
I got mine here.
There's one left, a token Mac.
I want to ask you girls, as you look forward to the future, now, two of you were in the advanced one. Sophia, and Rachel, you were in the advanced web design, am I right?
So, Rachel and Annie.
I beg your pardon. Rachel and Annie, I'm sorry, I got the list wrong here. Rachel and Annie were, right? Okay, okay. And then, Jackie, you were in the beginner division.
Yes.
All right. What are some of the things that you like to see when you go to a web page? Let's start with you, Annie.
I like it when it's simple and just functional. I prefer less fancy tricks and just function. Like, I have to be able to find what I need quickly.
Like it, yeah.
And I don't want to have to go searching for anything.
A clean website. Yeah. I like that, too.
Do you put a lot of video or any audio on the website?
We put a 15-second video, but it was a requirement, so everyone had one.
Rachel, how about you? I'm sorry.
I agree with Annie. Mostly like that the website does what it's supposed to do. Like, if it's supposed to show off like someone's art portfolio or like their fancy skills with, you know, animation or whatnot, like that would be important to have more like flashy elements, I guess. Yeah. But if it's just like an information oriented website,
right? I want to ask you, Jackie, what are some of the things now? I know you're beginner level here that you don't like about websites that really bother you when you go to websites.
I don't really like how they said a lot of flashy like moving things, because I think it's kind of distracting.
Mm.
And
That's interesting because I think in the early days of web design, it was like, put as much as you can on there, you know, well, pages that are moving and flash and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it was just like when you found out you could do it in different fonts, you put all the different fonts on it. And finally, we got smart about that.
The other thing, too, is I'm colorblind. I'm red-green colorblind. So some pages actually disappeared for me. Just complete. They put them in these colors. I couldn't see what the heck was on the page. What's next for you from this point on? And let's start with you, Rachel. Where are you going to go with this? What are you thinking of doing with these skills?
I really don't know. I mean, when I entered like MCWT's Get It program, I didn't even like think about doing web design or anything. And so now this is just like a very pleasant surprise about like, okay, hey, it's awesome. Well,
who knows where this could lead?
Yeah. Did you know you were that creative?
I guess.
Yeah. You did? You
really
did?
Annie did. So.
But Rachel did. I mean, because sometimes when you get it done, you know, you do your first web site and you go, wow, I really did that. I'm pretty good at that. You know, did you feel that way?
A little bit, yeah. Just looking at the finished
project.
Yeah. I was like, this is cool.
Annie, how about you? What is this going to do for you in your future? Any direction?
Well, I think web development in general is just a really useful skill to have. I mean, every company needs a website, and especially as we go in the future, it'll probably be more things will be online. And even my brother was recently applying for jobs, and he made himself a website for his portfolio, and I think it's just a useful thing to do.
Very interesting skill. Jackie, how about you? What will this do in terms of the classes you take and the directions you take in school?
Well, starting out, I like had no idea about any of this web designing stuff at all. And now, like after doing it, it was actually really fun, and I really enjoy it. So I'm thinking about like maybe doing something like as a career or in the future with it.
That's cool. What do your peers think of you? What do the other girls and guys think of what you're doing there? Are you geeks to them?
No.
Oh, no, that's a bad word? No? You don't think?
Well, obviously in our Get It Club, we're kind of mini celebrities, I guess. Well, people in our Get It Club really like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Outside of that, a lot of the people who have seen our website are really impressed. And
okay.
A lot of them don't know about Get It, and so when they see it, they start getting interested in our club, too. So it's a good way to get our club out there, too.
Excellent. And Jackie, why don't you explain just briefly what Get It is, because we're going to talk with some of your sponsors. Are you not involved in it, Jackie?
Uh-uh.
Okay, good. Okay, why don't you try it then, Rachel? What's Get It?
Get It, well, it's an acronym for, like, Girls Exploring Together Information Technology.
Okay.
And it's very creative. I like it. And basically, in our school, it's basically just like a club for a bunch of girls who are interested in technology, and we just like vote on like what things we want to do, like Android app development or like
that's
robots.
Really cool.
Or
well, fantastic! Yeah. I want to congratulate all of you on this for being involved in this. Again, we've had Rachel Xiang from Plymouth Canton, Annie Fu from Plymouth Canton as well, and also Jackie Kropisch, who's with Lakeshore High School. Thank you all for being involved in this and for being with us on the air here. We may have talked to some tech stars in the future here. In just a moment, we're going to be talking with two of the people from the Michigan Council of Women in Technology about the program. Welcome back. Foster Brown, Gary Baker in studio here. And we're delighted to be with you as well. By the way, we have a three-hour show, so we've got another hour of guests coming up after this. And then from 5 until 6, we'll be taking your phone calls live at 800-859-0WJR. And we'll be telling you more about that later on. Thank you so much, by the way, for joining us again. InternetAdvisor.net is our homepage, and you will find there a whole bunch of information about our program today, including, by the way, Gary, I just posted a little link here for the website displaying the girls' websites. What that means is the young ladies who were with us before, Rachel Xiang and Annie Fu, worked together on a website, and Jackie Kropisch worked on one herself. She was in the beginner level, and the other two were in the advanced level, and they were winners of the Michigan Council of Women in Technology's Web Design Contest. So we had a link up there on our homepage as well. But we should introduce to you some of the people from that Michigan Council of Women in Technology, two of the people who worked there. Barbara Kalfleisch is here. Hi, Barb. How you doing?
Foster.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're
a planner with the council, right?
Yes, I plan the foundation activities and its outreach to grade school girls, middle school girls,
like this contest,
right. Yes.
And so what they have is they have the Michigan chapter of Women in Technology, and that's a number of women and a few men that are smart enough to go, you know, where there's some really good technology happening. And then there's the foundation, which really does this kind of work and trying to get our young women interested and stay interested in technology.
Somebody else who's with us in studio is Patricia Howard, who was a volunteer. Glad to have you with us.
Hi there. Thank you.
What drew you to this organization and to work with young ladies in technology?
I actually started in the MCWT, which is adults, and then I heard there was a web design contest, and having a background as a web designer, I wanted to get involved.
So what did you think of the web designs the girls came up with?
They are amazing. These girls, every year, our contestants do better and better. They have more advanced sites, and the judging gets tougher.
What did you see them do this year that impressed you most?
The quality of the sites, the graphics, and a lot of them made their own graphics. They drew them or took photos. It used to be a few years ago we had a lot of clip art, now the girls are really working on original work, and they put a lot of effort into refining the sites. It's not just, oh, it's red or, oh, it's blue background. It's really professional-looking work.
What do you think is the source of that, if you will, more sophistication for these young women? I mean, they're in high school. I forget the ages of them or the classes that they're in, but they're basically high school age. How did they get to be so sophisticated at this so young?
We took some of the Get It Club girls. Get It is a club that Michigan Council of Women and Technology sponsors.
Just quickly about that.
We have three Get It high schools and hoping to expand to six in the coming school year, in the 2013-14 school year. University High School in Ferndale is our original Get It school.
Right.
And Plymouth Canton, the PSEP school, is a second Get It school. They have a great teachers at both of those that make a big difference for the ladies. We're hoping to expand to Lakeshore, so we have an interested teacher there who's very dedicated as well.
And you got a pioneer there.
Yeah, and a pioneer. So that
Jackie's
would
a
be
pioneer.
Great.
She's leading the way there. That's fantastic.
Yes.
So these clubs are designed to get girls who are interested in technology, give them a kind of a way of getting together and feeding off of one another and challenging them as well.
That's right. And then in the winter, we segue into the robotics competition at Lawrence Tech University.
Yeah, that's
right. So that's a lot of fun as well, the RoboFest.
Yep, we've been involved in that just to help promote that a few times over the years. So, Patty, I'm just curious. I mean, some of the technology is really cool. Do you help the girls? Do you give them suggestions? Or is this stuff they come up with on their own?
We give them guidelines and a very intense list of criteria, several pages. They have to meet every one of these. And they're rated, the judging is on a score from 5 to 1. And they're amazing. I'm sorry, I get so distracted.
That's right.
The girls' sites are they're advanced. They're surpassing some of our volunteers.
I'm very impressed.
You know, I'm distracted too because I'm looking at Annie and Rachel's site. What a cool site this is, the way it displayed. And you've got images that keep on changing. Where'd you get this from? Was there a kid out there for this? No. Wow, that is something else. How do they get this kind of stuff?
Like the hero stories and the transitions.
This isn't finger painting, guys. This is really, really good stuff. I love the graphics on this and the way things change on it. By the way, as I said before, you can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and we have a link there to these websites that the girls put up.
But if you're going to take a look at them, try not to do radio at the same time.
That's right. It leads to some terrible distractions going on here. So how many years has this been going on, the web design
contest?
This
is our 7th year.
Wow.
I know, and it just keeps getting better and better. And Foster, you asked about why are these girls different? How do they know so much? I did hear a term. They are technology natives. Me, at my age, I'm a technology immigrant. I'm learning, and they are natives. And it's huge difference, the age group.
What kind of web designs sites have you designed for, Patty?
I've retired from web design. It's surpassed me.
Were the commercial ones that you were working for when you were doing the web design at the time, you know, different sites that you designed?
Oh, you know, some of these girls, they could step into professional positions. That's how good their sites are.
They really are.
In fact, Comerica Bank offers the first place winner in the advanced category a summer internship. Last year, Rachel and Annie were first place winners as well.
A dynamic duo.
I know, and they worked the summer at Comerica Bank, and I think one of them said that they were thinking when they showed up for their internship they were going to be file clerks. No, Comerica threw them right into the IT department, and they had a great summer, and they'll repeat as Comerica interns this summer, and so will our first place winner. They were foundation winners We have a first place winner in advance, Sophia Lee, and she will also work at Comerica.
That's fantastic. Well, Gary, I'm thinking...
The CIO out there, George Shadu, is really good, and he's got a great staff. And I know they're doing a lot of agile development out there, and I think I'm hoping that they give the opportunity to the young women to let them experiment with some of that that new process.
This really ties in with our second hour, by the way, Gary, because we're going to be talking about ways of taking these technology natives and trying to plug them into Detroit 2.0, which means in this area, there is a rebirth going on right now, a lot of it behind technology. And we're going to have some folks in from Meritful.com talking about that, along with somebody who was a young man who was an intern coming out of college now, going into one of
Cindy Welsh will be joining us.
Yeah. So this is interesting that this theme continues to go on. So it sounds like even though there are less young women involved in technology, they're coming with a whole bunch of skills.
Yes, they are. It's just incredible what they can do. And if you've ever seen a two-year-old swiping already with the gestures on a phone, that's the native.
I saw a great YouTube video where they had, it couldn't have been more than a year old baby, and was looking at an iPad and, you know, poking at it and swiping and doing all sorts of fun things, kind of as a baby would do. But they took it away and put a magazine there, a bright, colorful ad magazine. And the baby would push on the images on the magazine and started to and get frustrated and started to cry. And I thought, that's a native for you. You know, they want the richness of the iPad.
That is fascinating. And I think what I find exciting about this is that these technological natives, if you will, people who have grown up in this, are bringing entirely different perspectives. In some ways, I get very tired. A lot of the tech writing comes from old crocodiles like me who are coming out of, you know, a lot of the criticism of Windows 8, I think, has come from people who see it as, you know, not the way they use it now. And they want to get back to where they're comfortable with it. And I say, push those people away, bring their kids up. I want to hear what their teenagers have to say.
We used to have sundials and inkwells, too.
Yes.
Good point.
I've actually been able to read a sundial. I used an inkwell at one time. Well, that's a little scary. What other kind of programs have you got going at MCWT?
Well, we take the Get It Girls on field trips. In fact, that was where I learned the term about technology native. We took them to Microsoft, and they were introduced to Windows 8 live and in person at Microsoft last spring. And then, of course, we have the Summer Camp Infinity for the younger girls, if you have going in eighth grade girls.
And some of the ways that you raise money, you have a gala that just last month.
Yes. Yeah. Boy,
was that
fabulous.
Very
at the book
successful.
Cadillac. Yes.
Yeah. Very successful and a lot of fun. And then you have a golf outing, too. So
yes.
That's sold out. And I know that you raffled off a couple playing times with some of the CIOs from around here. And some of the vendors said, oh, I want to play golf with that CIO. So that raised a little extra money, too.
It did. And we had auctioned off some lunches with CIOs as well.
This has got to be really gratifying to the women who have worked professionally, you know, has been part of the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. You know, people who have been, we've had many of them on the program here with us who are in very important positions in information technology. It must be really gratifying for them to see these young people coming up.
It is. Some of the finals day judges, like Linda Monteith at Comerica and Mark Parker at Mercedes-Benz Financial Services, they're just so impressed. And Janet McQueen at Blue Care Network, they hosted it. They gave us their auditorium. It was great.
Thank you again so much for the work that you do and for all that Michigan Council of Women in Technology does. Barb Kalfleisch, thank you. And Patricia Howard, thank you both for being here with us.
Thanks, Foster.
And once again, thank you for letting us be part of your afternoon or evening, as it may be, and for letting the Internet Advisor be here. We're on for 3 hours today, so we're just wrapping. This is just hour number one, and at 4 o'clock, which is usually the hour that we start our program here on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, we will be having a whole bunch of other guests in. And then we've got another hour coming after that from 5 to 6 with open line questions. But right now, we're delighted to bring back somebody who was with us last week, and we'll kind of call him our Windows 8 answer man, at least for the time being. That's Aaron Wimette, who is with Apex Digital. Aaron, thank you for joining us again.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I don't want to put too much of a burden on you because there are a lot of people out there with questions about Windows 8 and making it work. But thanks for joining us here.
My pleasure.
Now, Aaron, as a matter of fact, this is some background. You helped to write a handbook, am I right, for engineers who are working with Windows 8?
Yes. So one of the things that I do is help Microsoft develop the training curriculum and certification materials for the Windows platform.
Wow.
And I first met Aaron through his company, Apex Digital Solutions, which is in Sterling Heights. They are, or you are, Aaron, the number one partner for Microsoft for the Heartland region. You became Partner of the Year this year.
Yes, we are. We're very proud of that.
And you also are one of 15 firms that have been invited to Redmond and I know you can't talk a whole lot about it, but...
He could, but he'd have to kill us all.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people listening. Just tell us, between you and us, but you've been invited to Redmond to help on some of the newer technologies that will be coming out in the future.
Yep. So we partner very closely with Microsoft as a Microsoft partner, and we've been invited to really help them start onboarding users onto some of the newest products that aren't available for the really aren't available to the public yet. Just so Microsoft can start getting early feedback on how the products are really being used, and then go back and make tweaks and changes so they can be fully released to the public.
I've been listening to a Windows program about a lot of stuff coming up, a lot of stuff coming up next year.
You know, one of the questions I had, it's been, 3 weeks to a month since Windows 8 has been released. Have you seen a change in how people are either approaching it or, because the media was really down on Windows 8.
Yeah.
Since it's been released, and it's been almost a month, how are the opinions now?
A lot of people, it's still, because it's so different, if you are using a tablet device, it is so different than previous versions of Windows. It's really oriented more towards that touch and tile type of interface, really trying to take a page out of the, out of the Apple playbook, but put the Microsoft spin on it, from the, really the touch aspect. So it's I think for people who are new to computers, I think it's pretty easy to pick up on.
Yes.
For those of us who've kind of been around the block with Microsoft for the last, 15 years or so, it is definitely something to get adjusted to. So I think a lot of the naysayers are people who have more experience with technology and have used it through its various iterations.
I think for
new people, it's a pretty positive product.
Absolutely.
They don't want to learn something new, right? And and that's the whole idea, is we've wanted Microsoft for so long to come out with, a new interface, and they finally did.
Yeah, they did.
And now people are saying, gee, it looks different. It's new.
Yeah, it's not what I expected it to be.
And I think in many ways it's revolutionary rather than evolutionary, and that's part of the challenge. Kel, you were going to say something?
Well, with Apex and with the training stuff that you guys do out there and that sort of thing, is there a feature in Windows 8 where I can, and I think in previous versions of Windows they had it, where I can flip a switch and it looks like Windows 7 again?
Unfortunately, so there is not a give me the Windows, the Windows XP or the Windows 7 start button.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't exist, but there are some third-party products, and that you didn't hear me tell you about Stardock. they have a free product called Start 8 that really brings back the start button interface. Just because that is probably the biggest thing that people had a hard time getting used to is that when you hit start, all of a sudden your screen. It's a bunch of tiles, and where's my programs? Where's all this stuff?
But I got to tell you, Aaron, today for the first time, I went into both a Best Buy and a Staples and got my hands physically onto a Windows Surface RT. They just have opened up. And by the way, folks, if you want to see that story, go to internetadvisor.net. And I've got some pictures that I took in the store, some very interesting things to see, but they're both there. I was fascinated. Now, I've been using Windows 8 on a PC, so I've been using it with a mouse. Wow, what a difference to use it on a tablet, and to what you said before, for a new user coming to it who doesn't have a whole bunch of technical things they want to do. They just want to get email and maybe watch a video or whatever, or browse the web. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it is really amazing when you look at it from that perspective. And I think a lot of people just don't get the full, you can't really fully appreciate it until you're using it on a touch device.
Yep.
So there are a number of manufacturers. I know Dell has a consumer model right now, and
HP I think does too.
And HP has a couple that are convertible
mm-hmm.
convertible slates
mm-hmm.
that have that touch interface. You can use it. and it has a built-in keyboard. And so a lot of people have been, you know, a little bit disappointed with the, you know, with the Surface RT, or, you know, the Surface RT, just because it's not as powerful as is what they had hoped.
Yes.
Because it's built on a different processor, and it's so it can't run all of the normal Windows programs. They feel a little bit slighted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use Windows 8 on a touch-enabled device, and then the Surface Pro comes out in January.
Yes, that's the big brother, and it's coming out in January. And I think
and that's the one I'm waiting
when
for.
When that comes out, I think there is going to be a whole lot of revolution going on. I got to ask you a quick question because we don't have much time here. I've been using it. One of the things that new users, I think, and old users will have a bit of a challenge is there's two different browsers. There's an IE10, Internet Explorer 10, that is for the metro, the modern user interface, the one with the tiles.
Yep.
And there's one that's for the desktop, which is more like, Cal, that's like going back to the way things were in Windows 7. Essentially, it looks like a Windows 7 window. What are the key differences between them?
You know, really the biggest differences are, you know, kind of, I guess, mainly in the interface. There are some things that don't work as well, so like, you know, things like if you were used to bookmarks and setting home pages and doing stuff like that, a lot of that stuff is a lot different in the modern interface.
Yeah, and then yeah, like things like where the address is, the URL address is now on the bottom instead of on the top.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, if you were previously using, you know, IE7 or 8 or 9, yeah, mm-hmm. in most browsers the, you know, the address bar is at the top. And then with IE 9, Microsoft had introduced like the download banner. So when you download a file, instead of popping up the dialog box in the middle of the screen, now it's just, you know, now it's kind of down there in the system tray area.
Yes.
So people have started looking down there, but it is definitely a different way to look at the thing.
I have.
And
disorienting things that I found between the two browsers is that the address bar and your forward and backward buttons and stop and stuff, those all disappear, so you get the full screen advantage of a web page. And when you're using a mouse, it's not as intuitive.
That's
to
the
how
Metro.
To get those
that's
back.
The tile version, the Metro version of the.
Yes.
Yeah. We can't say Metro anymore.
Oh,
the MUI.
Yeah. I can.
It's the MUI.
The MUI. You're right. We've gone from GUI to MUI. And by the way, there's a NUI out there. We'll talk about that another time. A natural user interface.
Ooey.
Ooey, gooey, and mooey. Anyway, I'm going to have to ask you this offline because I've had a problem with printing, that my printer will work when it's on the desktop version of the Metro, of IE10, but it won't work when it's on the tile version.
Well, that's not supposed to happen.
No, I'll have to troubleshoot with him off the air. But Aaron, thanks so much for being back with us and being our Windows 8 answer man.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself, and hang on, because I do want to ask you that question when we get off the air. And the rest of you folks, stick around, because we got a great second hour coming up. We're going to be talking about Michigan's Cyber Range, kind of a boot camp for cybersecurity people here in our state of Michigan. We'll also be talking about how to get young college people involved in the booming technology business that's going on called Detroit 2.0. And we'll be talking with Emily Hay this coming hour about social media for the season. Lots more coming up, and then an hour of your calls from 5 until 6. So there's plenty more to hear on the Internet Advisor. Stay tuned and visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast.
Hello, Foster Brown with you here on the Internet Advisor, hour number two of a supersized Internet Advisor. We've got a great program lined up for you right now. If you're just joining us, we're going to be talking about Michigan's Cyber Range, kind of a boot camp for cybersecurity experts. We'll be talking also about getting young graduates involved in our booming Michigan's Detroit 2.0, the booming technology sector here. And we'll be talking with Emily Hay about social media for the season. Let's do. Stick around. Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor. By the way, our homepage is chock full of information, internetadvisor.net. Check the show notes out there for links to a lot of the things that we'll be talking about during this hour of the program. Cybersecurity, tremendously important subject. We've talked about Richard Steenan has been our guest on here. We've had, matter of fact, a former head of the CIA was on with us talking about
General Mike Caden.
Right, talking about it's a global battle that's going on right now. Well, how is Michigan taking care of itself in this? Well, our Governor Snyder recently cut the ribbon on an innovative cyber training center, which has been known as the Michigan Cyber Range. And Gary, we have a special guest to talk about.
We do, and I will tell you that you know, we've had some special guests on our program here, and I want to introduce Don Welch. Don, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
You know, when I invited you, I didn't know some of your background, and people can go to internetadvisor.net and read it, but I'll just give you a couple points. Graduate of West Point, served 25 years in the Army, retired as a colonel. Notable assignments include infantry commander, company commander, and, you know, there are a few of them. IT for Delta Force?
Oh, dude.
Ooh, that sounds cool. That sounds very cool. Professor and CIO at West Point. Pretty good. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So well qualified
named
for this.
As a champion of change by the White House, innovator and leader of the year, and one of Michigan's top CEOs, Don. Wow.
Thank you
welcome.
So much.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you.
Hey, I know there's lots of headlines today involving the governor and what's going on up in Lansing, but it's wonderful to have a technology knowledgeable governor, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us about the Cyber Range and how that got started and what's Merritt's involvement.
Sure. About 18 months ago, I got asked to be on the governor's executive cybersecurity committee to help form his strategy. And as we talked about that strategy, we saw a lot of needs, but one of them would be for a facility and a program like the Cyber Range. And about 85% of our nation's critical infrastructure is going to be defended by civilians, not by the military or by the federal government. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, important part of our Constitution. So how are we going to raise this cyber militia, so to speak, to be able to defend our critical infrastructure? And it really is somewhat like a militia. It goes back to our revolutionary days when the federal government couldn't defend
a citizen army. Everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Governor Snyder saw this as two-pronged. One is we want to be able to defend our critical infrastructure, but the other is the opportunity to become a leader in developing cybersecurity professionals to help bring economic development to the state of Michigan.
Brilliant.
And so our Cyber Range, which is a public-private partnership, we have many agencies from the state of Michigan, and to include the National Guard. We've got a lot of our private industry, and our very large contributors are DTE and Consumers Power.
Of course.
And then, of course, all the educational institutions that Merritt represents. Our public universities are on our board, but we also work quite a bit with the private schools, with K-12, with community colleges, and so forth. And we've got broad involvement across that whole educational sector.
When this is really special in Michigan because other states don't have a cyber range like this.
Right.
And we're really a leader. But we've been a leader here in Michigan for a long, long time. And really, it's because of Merritt. Merritt managed NSFNet, the backbone of the Internet, before it was called the Internet.
Right.
And, I mean, that was because of your partnership with IBM and MCI.
Mm-hmm.
But really, Merritt did the work. And that was right here in the state of Michigan. So we've been a leader in the Internet space for a long, long time. It just goes to reason then that we should have Merritt manage this very, very unique and absolutely critical activity.
Well, I think the other aspect, too, is that being an independent non-for-profit, it's a lot easier for us to get the collaboration and to be agile enough to get this off the ground. So we first looked at this idea in October of last year when we had the National Security Summit. And we had the ribbon cutting, and on January 9th, Washtenaw Community College, and soon after that, Eastern Michigan, will be teaching classes using the range. So it was
When you say range, I'm thinking of like missile range where you're lobbing bullets are going.
They're just cyber bullets.
Yeah, well, is that what it's intended to be?
Well, if you think about the idea of a range, it's a place where you can do something that's inherently dangerous in a safe way, and you can train on it. But then the key about the cyber range and how it's really even different from that. Cybersecurity, I look at it as a crawl, walk, run kind of thing. Right. You have to understand technology. You have to understand the basics of cybersecurity. But what you really have to be able to do is outthink your adversary as a team. So it's very much like the military. It's, you know, you can be a civil engineer and you've got to be able to deal with Mother Nature, and it's not always easy, but Mother Nature's not cunning. and so you've got to be able to outthink your adversary, and you need to practice to do that. And unless you're in a really small organization, you're going to be working as a team, and you don't want to learn to work as a team when your primary ways of communication are under attack. So
yes, right. Yeah.
So do you have like a practice squad that you can, you know, the black hats against the white hats?
Well,
is that
we call
what
it, yeah. So we'd call it the red team.
Okay. And it makes sense.
Yes, we're there. But the most important thing is not just that you have the red team, but that you have the exercises themselves very well instrumented, because it's one thing to go and win or lose and know what the score is, but it's another to go through in the after action review and understand this is what I did right, this is what I did wrong.
Wow. And that's what the value of the range is. You get to learn those things. Mm-hmm. Don, thank you so much for being here with us. And we're going to have to take much more time as this develops. Can we have you back again to talk about
sure,
it?
Sure, that would be great.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Don Welch, who is with us, he is the director of the Michigan Merit Network and involved very much with the Michigan Cyber Range. In just a moment, we're going to get the next generation of Welches with us to talk about young people in technology. Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson at studios here. And, you know, our theme, I think in some ways, Gary, we had in the last hour some young ladies who were involved in a web design contest.
That's
we're talking
right.
about interesting topic brought up about technology natives, that these young people who are coming up now in high school and into college as well have grown up with this stuff. Not old geezers like you and I, Cal, who need a little, Grecian formula every now and then.
You know, I just was going to say that, you know, we should have a webcam, really. I mean, because normally this studio is filled with a lot of wrinkles and old gray hair. And it was so nice to see fresh faces, smooth skin, and youthful outlooks.
and knowledgeable youthful
yeah,
outlooks.
And yes, speaking yes. of that, let me introduce a couple of guests right now. Sandy Welch is with us. Sandy, thank you very much for joining us here. Whoop, got to press a button there that goes on. Yeah. There we go. We got exactly. you on. Sandy, you are a student right now, am I right?
Mm-hmm. I'm a junior at University of Michigan.
At the University of Michigan. You are, by the way, the son of Don Welch, who was just on.
Yes.
Carrying on this is a generational thing about IT. Both of your folks were involved in IT, right?
Mm-hmm. They both studied computer science, yes.
Okay. Now, are you studying computer science right mm-hmm. now? Is that your major? Okay. Let me introduce the other person who was with us at this time, because I think these things are going to be good synergy, as they say in fancy words. And that is Dr. Azarias Reda, who was with us. He is with Meritful.com. And welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the last time we were talking about you're helping young people in high school, college, create a healthy web presence for themselves, right?
Right.
It's kind of create their own curriculum vitae, which is a good one you want out there, not,
right.
you know, the bong picture or somebody running around in their underwear kind of thing. Now, what we brought you in today, though, because what I find interesting is kind of the compliment, because Sandy, right now you are involved in an internship, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, talk about that a little bit, about that internship you're involved in.
So I work for a small startup technology company in Ann Arbor called DeepField.
DeepField, what kind of things do they do?
So basically, the problem a lot of large companies have is they have this giant network, and they get tons of data sources, like NetFlow, BGP. And so they know all the stuff, but they don't have the overall picture. They can't put all the pieces together,
mm-hmm.
And so that's what we try to provide.
You know, it's really wonderful because there still are a lot of large companies in Michigan that can offer internships, and there are a lot of our college students and recent grads that are taking internships with some of the larger companies. But Sandy, you're with a young startup, and that's got to be exciting. And there's so many of them today.
Oh yeah, I mean the startup community in Ann Arbor, especially. Both fostered by the University of Michigan and just the independent startup community, is absolutely amazing. I mean, it's such a great environment, such a great community.
Now, Dr. Reeder, you're trying to work with that, with these young people in particular. Tell me what Meritful is trying to do in this atmosphere for young people like Sam.
Correct. And we can speak to the startup scene in Ann Arbor as well, being one of them.
That's right. Yeah, right. You're part of that community.
So what Mirrorful is a professional development platform. It sort of helps students get into jobs that really fit them, but also help companies and startups, for example, or big companies, build a talent pipeline. And the way we do that is by connecting ambitious engineering students with accomplished professionals at some of these companies.
Particularly the startups in particular, or some of the bigger ones?
Yeah, big ones as well. And the idea is to sort of establish a meaningful relationship between students and companies early in the students' careers as they're starting out in, you know, junior year, sophomore year, and that on.
So how would you work with Sandy, for instance, on something like that?
So the way it works is students are able to showcase their work, their projects, their activities, a class or internships, and they get feedback from professionals that they're connected to. This could be around the projects or, you know, in a bigger professional development sense where they're getting advice and coaching in the particular area they're interested in. And we hope that that relationship grows over time and essentially helps in retaining some of the talent that's coming out of, you know, great universities like Michigan and MSU and everybody else to stay in the state.
Mm-hmm. And we need them to stay in the state. Absolutely. Because we don't have enough IT professionals, right?
We have. They just go.
Yeah, well, we had them and they leave, but we don't have them enough to stay, right? Yeah. We need more to stay.
So, Doctor, if I could ask you a question, because I'm sure there's lots of young people out there listening right now, could you give me an idea of one of the most unusual pair-ups you had for, like, a young gentleman like Sandy here? What's an unusual company that you got him tied into?
For example, you have bigger companies. Let's talk about Intuit, who is one of the companies we're working with, who is not a Michigan company. But, you know, this is a big company with pockets of innovation within the company itself. You know, they're, you know, this all tax company, but they have a company called Mint within themselves that is very, you know, startup-y, et cetera. You would not know about, you know, you look at Intuit and you don't expect to get this sort of innovation within. So we have people, students who are, you know, talking about projects, et cetera, and getting help and feedback from people within this gigantic company into it. But these are really, you know, active people in the startup scene. So that's not very common that you get.
Sandy, okay, I'm not going to pick on Sandy because he looks like a really nice guy and that sort of thing. But, okay, so I'm a young person. I'm in my early 20s. I'm sitting in my basement playing video games all day. But yet I write a little code every now and then. How do I get in contact with you so I can find out about these wonderful opportunities?
So right now we're focusing on Michigan universities and Big Ten at large. So Meritful is the name of the company.
And we have that linked on our homepage, right, at Meritful.com.
Meritful.com. So we have one portal for companies that want to get involved in, one portal for students. So the student, you sign on and you basically express your interest, what you're interested in, and you start building this what we call showcases where maybe you wrote code every once in a while. So you could have source code there, you could have video, pictures, etc. And on the other end, we're working with companies such that they can bring on employees who can look at folks who are interested in what they're working on and just take them on as students. And you have coaching.
Sandy, how did you hook up with the particular startup that you're with?
So I actually I had a previous internship at Merit Networks, and the two co-founders of DeepField are both ex-Merit employees. And that comes back to the problem that they don't know where to find the talent. So it goes through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So that's where a website like this could really help put people, like, connect them.
Talk about the problem again, a little deeper.
So the problem is, I see it with my classmates, internships they go to. It's a lot of word of mouth. Because you can look at somebody's resume, and they can have a good GPA, they can work previous internships. But you don't really know. I mean, you don't really know who they are, what type of code they write, what environment they'd fit into. So that's where a lot of employers. They really, because when you think about it, especially for a small startup, it's expensive to spend half a day interviewing somebody, and then have it not be a good fit. So you can't afford to interview like a ton of people. You want to really know the person before they come in.
Mm. So how do you, you have a lot of classmates. Are they finding internships for the summer?
With computer science, I think we're lucky in that they're very much in demand. So most of my classmates at this point have found internships for the summer.
Yeah, that was kind of a setup question because when we prospect at the U of M for sure, and even at Wayne State and a couple of the others, Oakland U, you can't find an unpaid intern anymore because everybody's going, why? I've just got offered $15 an hour. I just got offered $20 an hour. We heard that Google is offering, or I'm sorry, it was Facebook,
yes,
offering An outrageous sum for some of their interests.
Gary, you still looking for slave labor in this day?
Well, you know, I mean,
indentured servitude, you work until you earn a laptop and you can leave.
My daughter is also a junior at the U of M, and I will tell you that she had an unpaid internship. It was a very, very, very cool, very sought-after internship, but it was unpaid last year. I'm looking for her. I said, you know, dear Lauren, you need to get into IT because not only are you going to get a paid internship, but you're going
to
have a
great
job.
What's so exciting to me about here is all the things that are kind of swirling around here with Detroit 2.0. And I know that that phrase has been put out there. I like it because I really think that this has been a reboot for Detroit and that there are a lot of startup companies like the one that you're working with, Sandy, and Dr. the ones that you are trying to hook people up to and get the people prepared for it. That seems to be the cutting edge of where Detroit is right now, that there is this. I was just reading an article about another. Matter of fact, I think there were people that we've had in here, a company that came out of, remember the article I showed you and Mike Amon about the company that came out of Silicon Valley that came into Detroit?
Stick.
That's right. And it was precisely because here was where they could find the people to fill those positions. Guys, we don't have enough time right now to go any further into this, but folks, to follow it up, go to the homepage. You will find a link to help to meritful.com. I was going to say helpful.com because you are. Dr. Reed, thank you so much for being with us. Azarias Reed was with us, and also Sandy, thank you so much for being with us as well. The sultry sounds of a very talented young lady named Gina Sciuto, and she's part of a group that are with us in our studios here, and they are called Infinity Hour. Let me introduce you to these young men, Jared Bentley. Jared, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Jared is a guitar player. We've got Dylan Walsh. You're on drums, right, Dylan?
Yep.
All right, and we've also got Brad Rood. Brad, yep. Thank you for joining us. And you play...
Bass.
Very good. Guys, thank you so much for joining us here. We're going to play a little more of your music at the end. Eddie, we wanted you to chime in because this is, I know, near and dear to you, Hart, a young band that's kind of breaking out.
Yep. Yeah, I got guitar picks in my wallet, too. So
that's awesome.
He's right at home here, folks. Ed's son, Talon, is also part of...
Third Degree Burns. Yeah,
it's
we don't need
which
it. We're not talking about them, though.
No, but it was a school of rock band, kind of getting young people like these guys here involved in learning rock. But you guys are quite accomplished in your music. You've had... now, do you have an album out? I know I can get to the album online.
We've had two EPs. The most recent one was recorded last year, and it's all on iTunes. Everything's on iTunes.
If you look it up on
Infinity Hour on iTunes, you can find them all. And
wonderful.
Old and new.
Now, what I wanted to ask you guys about today is we've been talking about young people and technology, is how do you make yourself stand out? How do you be heard with all the bands that are out there in garages around the country who are putting music together? How do you get yourself heard?
It's definitely something you have to learn by just trying different things and figuring out what they care about in a band and what they want to see.
But how do you get the sound to them?
All sorts of different kind of media, you know, just sending out drop cards to people, trying to get email addresses and keeping them updated. But we've been trying to make music videos ourselves, just live music videos, and that's been a big help.
Do you do that? Does that go out to like to YouTube? Is that one of the places? That's
out to YouTube, and we use our Facebook page, Reverb Nation, any of the social media websites to try and get that out.
That's it. So social media really is the place.
It really
where
is.
Band. Now, Dylan, one of the things that Brad Bench was a drop card. Why don't you explain what a drop card? I'm holding one.
A drop card.
Can you hold it up to your radio? Can you hear it?
You go to the website and you put in the code that's on the back, and you get a free download of the song. And you also have to put in your email address, so it puts you on a list of email addresses, and then we can keep all those people updated with everything once
so,
they
So, Ed, can you get one of the cards there, Ed?
Yeah, I do.
Why don't you describe what you got in your hand for
Well, I mean, it is a business card size thing with a...
Like a business card.
Plastic. But it has a photo on the front of the band members. On the back is a redemption code with a web address.
So you go to this dropcards.com. So like a band like yours would, what do you do? Set up an account with them? Is that how it works?
Yes. Okay. Set up an account. You order the cards through the company, and they basically set everything else up from there. And
you can monitor
it.
Actually downloads them.
You can see where they're coming from, what parts of the country, even the world. And it's really cool. You can see all the stats and everything else.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on. This is a beautiful concept. I really do love this. But there's a problem here.
Uh-oh. What is that?
There's three of the five members of the band here, and the two prettiest ones aren't here. You guys are holding out on us.
There are actually four members of the band right now. And you're right. The one who has the astounding voice that we just heard when we came in was Gina Asciutto. Couldn't be with us tonight. But, yeah, you're right. Why do we? Where's we've got the beasts? Where's beauty?
And that is the hardest part. Is how do you get people to want to see you? You want to get the word out. You guys, you know, you're good. You sound great. And I understand that you're going to be doing something this weekend as well at St. Andrew's Hall.
Actually, the basement of St. Andrew's Hall. It's called the Shelter. We're a part of 89X's Battle of the Bands, opening up for Third Eye Blind. We're battling against three other groups, and whoever wins will get to open up for Third Eye Blind at the St. Andrew's.
So is it like a popularity contest? The more people you have watching you when you perform, is that how you win? Or how do you, what's the criteria to win?
40% of the judging is based on how many people you bring, which is 21 and over, so that's a little more difficult for us. But the 60% of it is talent and
all decided by 89X judges.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
okay,
cool.
So all you 21-year-olds and older bozos who love good music, come out and see these guys.
Yes,
cheer
please.
Really hard.
I gotta say, you know, I got to go. Props to Mitch Albom here on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit. Mitch had you on the air, I understand.
Yes, we did. We played some acoustic songs a couple months back.
Yeah, in the other studio here. So I'm God bless him. Mitch has done a great job of getting people who are new to the music scene, not to the ears, to have people listen. What I find fascinating about this is the whole new process is using technology and social media to get the word out about your band. Mm-hmm. And the drop cards are fascinating. But Facebook, tell us how Facebook works.
Facebook, like Brad said, trial and error. What we've found so far is that being personal and really trying to connect versus just saying, you know, we've got to show this date, this date, this date, in a creative way, trying to draw people in, and we're by no means professionals at it, but learning, trying to, it's a game, and, you know, if you play it right, it really works well.
Is it tough? I mean, you want to make
it
music,
is tough.
Right? You're like making music, not making the whole business of this. Is one of you the wonk in the group?
Well, we're all just doing our part, trying to figure out how it all works. It's just, it's part of the industry. I mean, it's not.
Yeah,
it's harder in a lot of ways because there's so many bands, and so many bands are getting out there and being heard. And
you
have to show what's different. You have to make people care about what you're doing.
It's interesting in my business, which is a voiceover work, and I've done it now for almost 40 years. You know, for a while you could work. You were part of a pool of talent that people knew here in Detroit, and that was fine. But then all of a sudden, with the internet, it's now international.
Yes.
And when people go looking for a voice, they're not just listening to the people here in Detroit. They're people all over the world, and in turn, we also can be heard in other places around the globe. But that's a challenge for you as a band, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's got its pluses and minuses for sure.
Yep.
By the way, I posted on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you will find a link under, if you just click on the Infinity Hour, which is the name of the group, I created a little page where they have a bit of a description of themselves. You see the four members of the band there, and also some links down there to their website, to the Facebook page. It talks about this Sunday's event coming up as well, and they have another event on Facebook at the Crowfoot Pike Room.
Mm-hmm.
What's that one coming up?
That one is on the 6th, I believe.
Yeah, Sunday the 6th.
Sunday the 6th.
Okay, But in other words, if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you'll link off to a whole bunch of things about the group. You'll see a picture of the group. You'll see a little bit of a description about them and what they're doing and where they're going. Now, is the thought of being on a record label something that a band looks for anymore nowadays, or is that kind of passé?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it depends on the situation, really. I mean, it's not something that we're, you know, not open to look into, but we're not trying to put all of our marbles into that avenue.
Records nowadays, they want to see bands like be at a certain level before they actually invest the money to to like get them signed and stuff. So like we pretty much need to use our all of our social media stuff to get us to that point where they can see us and see our, they're ready. They still definitely have a place.
Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Is there, you know, maybe we should try and do a search for it, but I wonder if there's any sort of Kickstart type things out there for bands. I mean, you know, maybe there may be a way.
Kickstart is an organization online where you can essentially kind of put your thing out there and invite people to be investors early
on
for small amounts of money.
We've done a Kickstarter before. We used them for specific purposes. We used one to produce an album at Groovebox Studios, and you know they do work really well.
How much did you raise that first time?
$1,200.
Okay,
and our goal was $600.
That's the idea with Kickstarter. It's often smaller amounts of money they put together over a period of time. They give you a number of days, doesn't it?
And then you know the people that invest win prizes. It's really a pretty cool thing. Definitely stuff that we've looked into and have considered for sure.
Now, you've already had some members be part of the group and no longer part of the group. How do you hold together? How do you hold together with all of this?
We're really fortunate to have a group of musicians that are, you know, we've got the chemistry. We all have the same end goal. And it's definitely fortunate for us to be able to get people that are on the same page.
Yeah, and so that you can be kind of a bunch of buddies that are doing this. And by the way, how did you meet, by the way, Dylan? How'd you guys get together?
They were all together through, I think it was Milford Music, the local music school. And
that's interesting.
Then they dropped band members and gained new ones. And
it's changed completely since then, and got Dylan a couple years back now, and we're just rolling.
Pretty cool. Well, guys, thank you so much for being here. It's called Infinity Hour. You're hearing the music behind me here. Gina Asciutto is the young lady who you hear singing. Remarkable vocal talent, and she is part of this wonderful group. Thank you so much for being with us, guys.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
On the way up, maybe when you get a little higher, we'll see you back in here again.
All right.
Thank you so much. Infinity Hour. Coming up in just a minute, Emily Hay is going to be back with us to talk about social media for the season. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'd just like to thank a couple people who have been working hard behind the glass. Our engineer, Rich Lisinski, thank you so much for all that you've done to help us make this program come together. Annie, thank you much. Annie Nichols, our lady of the phones, who is that friendly voice that greets you. And by the way, we'll be greeting many of you this coming hour when we open up our phone lines in just a little bit at 800-859-0957. That's right. We have another hour, and we are going to be answering your questions about your computer, smartphone, whatever you, any digital device you have. We'll take a crack at answering those questions. And the number again is 800-859-0957. That'll be starting just a little bit after 5 o'clock. All right. Right now, however, we have another lady who is a very important part of our program, and that is Emily Hay, who is the founder of Hey There Social Media, and she is our social media expert. Emily, happy holidays and welcome.
Oh, thanks, Foster. Happy holidays to you guys.
Thank you so much. A busy holiday season for all of us, and certainly that would include you. But we had you on to talk a little bit about some of the things that have been happening on the social media scene. Kind of interesting, this young band that we had in here, Infinity Hour, we're talking about how important social media has been for them to get their sound out and to build a following.
No, you're exactly right, and there's obviously ways to tell a story on social media, whether it's with sound bites or video or photo, as we're hearing so much of.
Yeah, Facebook is very important to them in terms of getting out to their listenership. Well, let's talk about some of the things that have been going on recently online. Some stories I'm hearing about Instagram, the big photo place, some changes that have taken place.
Yeah, exactly. So the big news with Instagram is really, it has a lot to do with how you see Instagram photos on Twitter, or the fact that you can no longer see Instagram photos on Twitter.
Yeah, more precisely.
Which is, why would that be?
I mean,
it's like the writing was on the wall 6 months, a year ago.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, as everyone knows, you know, with Instagram, remember, you open your Instagram app and you take a photo and you add that cool filter, and then you could share it over to Twitter. But now, again, the photos just are not visible on Twitter, mm-hmm. but you still see the link. So once you see someone's tweet, you can see the Instagram link, click on that, and then you'll see the Instagram photo.
And part of this is because of a change that took place at Twitter.
Sure. And, you know, they talk about the fact that Instagram was the one that pulled the feature mm-hmm. with no plans to really re-enable it. And remember, with Instagram being acquired by Facebook, it makes sense that Instagram is saying we want people to see our images, but we want them to see them on our own site or on Facebook.
So putting a little bit of a walled garden up there. Something I know that you have done on your page at Hey There Social Media. Matter of fact, we linked to it from our homepage, internetadvisor.net. You've done some teaching for parents there about Instagram. What are some of the things that you're talking about there?
Sure. Thanks, Foster. So Instagram, we see how it can be such a popular app for really anyone of any age to use. And we heard a parent recently say, oh, it's like a social network for kids. And that was really alarming to us because we wanted to make sure that people saw that Instagram still has some of the same rules as Facebook does, age requirements, and it also needs parental supervision because it's all based on photo sharing.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that photo sharing, you're concerned, I know, about one photo sharing is an app called Snapchat?
Yes. There's been a lot of news lately with Snapchat. I mean, with Instagram, our videos just talk about privacy settings and things that parents can learn how their children might be using Instagram. But Snapchat got a lot of attention recently because it almost feels extra kid-friendly. This app is photo sharing only, and it allows you to share a photo and set a timer, 10 seconds or less, with how long you want that photo to be live to the person that you send it to. So people feel like it might be consequence-free if they send a photo. Don't worry, it'll self-destruct.
But
that's interesting. I mean, even the homepage has like a, looks like Casper the Friendly Ghost on it. It's very kid-oriented.
Yeah, so sorry, that's part of the main reason why people are saying, well, wait a minute, it has this almost cartoon-like icon as the face of Snapchat, so it makes you think it might be kid-friendly.
But now, what is the issue with sexting? Have you guys have heard that issue of sexting where kids are sending pretty racy kind of messages and even pictures back and forth?
Sounds like the original Kwame thing.
Oh, dear.
You too can be a mayor.
Yeah, or Brett Favre, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, that's part of the problem with Snapchat is that it's been unofficially referred to as the sexting app because, again, it allows anyone to take a photo from a mobile device, and in their mind they think, okay, well, I'll just set the self-destruct timer to 3 seconds or less, and then the photo will be gone forever. So people might, especially children, might be more, you know, inclined to share a photo that they normally wouldn't.
Now, is it true that it's gone forever? Or, you know, I didn't think anything disappeared on the Internet, Gary. I thought it all lived in cyberspace forever.
Let's ask Emily.
Well, you guys are obviously the smart ones about that, and we as adults, most of us know that once it's out there, it's out there.
Yep.
But the problem with kids is that they are not seeing that all it takes is someone to grab a screenshot.
Yep.
So if they share a photo and someone grabs a screenshot, then it's obviously archived in some way, shape, or form forever and can be further shared from there.
Which makes a great resume grabber 20 years later when you go to get a job and someone says, oh, by the way, can I show you something I saw about you 20 years ago? So you want to always be careful on what you post on the Internet. I don't care if you're a kid or an adult because once it's out there, it's out there.
I got a grandson who's a sophomore right now at Michigan State University who somebody posted a picture of him that was at a party, and he's part of a fraternity. And I'm not going to say anything more, but I just said to my grandson, I said, do you really want that picture out there? May I suggest you go to your friend and tell them, please pull it down.
He was just being collegiate.
He was. He wasn't being, but it was the kind of thing, you know, that he's in a job interview and somebody says, we have this firm that has done a search of Facebook, and they came up with this image. I mean, excuse me, young man, did you do much of this?
I will tell you that, I've told you many times that my son lost his privileges to Facebook because of something that someone else wrote on his site. And because of that, his friend wrote this on Justin's site, Justin lost his Facebook privileges, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to organize some things in one group that he's involved in, and everybody's using Facebook. I said, Justin, you want your Facebook page back yet? I think it's about time. I think you're about ready. He looks at me. He goes, Dad, I'm not sure my friends are ready for me to have a Facebook site.
Oh.
So he doesn't have one by his choice now this time.
That is now very interesting.
Hey, Emily, if I could ask a question, and it's like, you know, swerving down the road, but you're Ms. Social Media as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thanks, Cal.
What's the newest thing coming online nowadays that, you know, at one time it was like Facebook was this thing burning in the background. Everybody was joining it little by little, and only the young people were doing it. What's the new thing coming up now that you've seen?
Well, there's a lot of rumors about MySpace coming back.
MySpace, the sequel?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was not an early adopter of MySpace myself, but that's something that people have said. They're revamping their image and looking to come back. You know, they weren't cool for a while, and who knows what will happen with them in 2013.
What segment of the population will grab it?
Well, you know, one of the things I had heard about, well, Justin Timberlake, I think, purchased MySpace, or is one of the partners that owns it.
Oh, really?
And MySpace was known really as the thing for musicians and artists.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And yet the Infinity Hour band that we had, it didn't sound like they were even using it for that.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, when Cal asked about things that are coming up or things are changing, you just mentioned one there, Ed, that celebrities themselves, you know, Lady Gaga has her own social network, and we keep hearing about these things. So it will be interesting to see. If you're big enough to create your own social network, then that's pretty neat to hear.
By the way, one final thing. This is probably the last time we'll talk to you this year. I understand Facebook allows you to create, you know, your year in review.
Yeah, so all you do is you're logged into Facebook, go to facebook.com/year-in-review. It's as simple as that. And then if you are already logged into Facebook, it'll pull up like a highlight reel of all the maybe some of the posts, some of the photos that you've shared over the last year that got the most attention.
Sounds
it's
like
really
a lot
easy.
Of fun. Emily, yeah, thank you so much. By the way, great resources at heytheresocialmedia.com. You'll find that if you link off of our homepage. That Emily, have a wonderful holiday season. We'll see you in a brand new year, at least if the Aztec calendar isn't right or Mayan calendar isn't right.
Thanks, Foster. Happy holidays to you guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Stay tuned, folks.
Bye-bye.
It's time for your calls.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team.
Thank you so much for joining us here for our very special open line part of our program. That's right. You get to call now with your questions about your computer, digital phone, whatever digital device you may be working with. We'll take a crack at answering it. Got a crack team of experts in here. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson, along with myself, Foster Brown, will try to get a handle on your question and get some answers for you. Here's the number, 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor, and this is our call-in segment. That means that when we're live as we are today on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit, that our phone lines are open for your questions. 800-859-0957 or 800-859-0WJR. And that's just two ways to get to the same place. And our lady of the phones, Annie Nichols, will be answering that and getting you lined up. And we got a couple people who are ready to talk with us a little bit. And we'll be getting to them just as soon as I introduce my fellow folks here who are here to help you. And that is Mr. Gary Baker, my partner here for going on 15 years.
We're here to help.
Yep. And Mr. Ed Riddell, glad to have you here.
This
as
is
well.
My favorite part of the show.
I know it is.
This is where I can actually contribute.
And Cal Carson as well. Cal, good to have you.
And you know what's really good about this show is that when you have a Jedi Master like Gary Baker, who does for the benefit of me and Ed, he goes out and he finds the most difficult challenges, brings them back so that we can enhance our knowledge base, so that we can deliver out to the audience the best possible answers.
I am just trying to help you guys come up with another answer, right? Just to expand our knowledge
I got to get a service RT so you guys can really have some fun in here. All right, listen, we got a bunch of people lined up here. Let's dive right into our calls and say hello to Joe from Livonia. Joe, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you, guys. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much.
A call.
Yeah, so what can we do for you?
Well, I need $1 million. Can you help me with that?
I can tell you where it's at, the local bank.
I can tell you, too. Okay, looking at, let me do it this way. I'm running old G4 computers, but I'm having a problem in terms of being able to get a high-speed connection where I'm at. I'm interested in going either to an iPad or a laptop, preferably a Mac. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure that I understand the difference between data plans versus voice if I go beyond Wi-Fi and go into an actual phone.
Oh, you mean with a phone or with an iPad?
Well, that's it's kind of a two-part question, and that is, can I use an iPad as a phone, or do I have to have an iPad and a phone?
The only way that you can use an iPad as a phone is that if you got an iPad and you are at least on Wi-Fi or with a data plan, mm-hmm. then what you would do in that particular case is use a utility like Skype,
right.
and you'd be able to place phone calls through the iPad that way.
There's a number like Skype Tango, I think, is another one.
Yeah, there's also like Cricket or Whistle, where you can actually get a phone number and people can call you that way.
I think Google Phone do that too?
And Google Phone may.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all of the phone calls that I make through Skype or any of these other apps, that would be considered as data, not as voice?
That is correct. It would be a data call because you're using, quote, voice over IP, end quote.
Right. Right. So you'd be concerned then about the cap on your data plan, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the voice would be that big a factor. I mean, I think the biggest drain on data plans, guys, am I right, is like TV, movies, things like that?
Yeah, video streaming is the biggest chewer of your data plan, where voice wouldn't chew up that much data because, number one, they compress the signal and then send it out in that compressed format, so it does not use as much of your bandwidth as something like video will.
Well, all right, so if I was using either YouTube or I was just, downloading something from any other site that has video, that would automatically make it data?
Oh, yeah. It would be a data. You're just...
Everything that you would download would be data. You mm-hmm. can't run a... You won't actually be using a voice plan at all on a pad.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why they have the phone number there associated with it is for the billing purposes, because they're a cellular company. And when they sell you an iPad, like with either AT&T or Verizon, they have a phone number associated with it, but you're not going to be able to. It's not like a shoe phone from Maxwell Smart that you can pick up. It's strictly for billing purposes.
Yeah,
legacy
systems. What they're selling you in that iPad is a cellular modem, not a cellular phone, but everything that's on a cellular network has to have a phone number attached.
So it would be 4G and, 4G LTE and AT&T
now,
and Verizon's.
Now, Cal, have you ever compared the cost of getting, like, say, an iPad with integrated, Verizon or AT&T data plan, as opposed to just getting a standard iPad that's Wi-Fi only and then using a MiFi device? That way you could shop and choose. You can get a T-Mobile, can get a Verizon or an AT&T or a
I think before I would do a MiFi device with a pad, I would probably look at getting a phone that I could tether with.
And then
the same price I'm paying for the MiFi, which is going to be about the same price as a phone anyway, I get a phone that I could tether with, get a tether plan, and then Wi-Fi through that
phone. Would you explain tether plan just for our listeners quickly?
Yeah. A tether is just like it gives you the ability to take your phone, change it into a Wi-Fi hotspot, and then you would connect Wi-Fi to that hotspot and be able to send your signal out. So it's tethering to the phone.
So, Joan, there's a number of options you can do there. And, if you're using an iPad for it, it's a good question whether you would use that effectively for making phone calls on it. I guess you could. With Skype, you can get around it, certainly.
Well, you do it if you don't have any other choice, and that's the best alternative that you have
out there.
But
nowadays, they're selling some of these smartphones or phablets, you name it. There's so many different things. Even with the iPad Mini, you've got a device that's between the larger iPad and that offers you the other. You could use that, I guess, to make calls on. I know people are using it to take pictures on. All right, here's a phone number, folks. 800-859-0999.
800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. Phone lines open for your question. Art will be with you in just a moment to answer your question. Pile on board. The lines are open. We'll look forward to talking with you in just a moment as the Internet Advisor Open Line continues. Hi, Foster Brown with you. By the way, if you have not heard us recently, that's because very often during the sports season here in our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, we are preempted by basketball or football games. And we have a lovely series of weeks coming up here where we're going to have some time for open line questions again here, again on WJR, our flagship station. If you're listening to this on our network, the Michigan Talk Network, or on our podcast, you can also get your questions to us by going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, clicking on the Contact Us button there, and then putting in the information and the question you have, and we'll get those answered as well. We take those, and we answer those questions both offline and on the air. Hey, Cal, there's something coming up this weekend. This is for folks who are listening live right now that is going to be especially of interest to people who enjoy doing photo work with a Mac.
That is correct. This weekend, matter of fact, on Sunday, December 16th, we have our monthly Mac group meeting over at the Birmingham Temple in Farmington Hills, and this week's topic is going to be Photoshop Elements 11. So what's really cool about this, it comes at a great time because, hey, you know, holidays are coming up. You're going to be taking pictures galore.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to make sure you get the best ones, and then after you get those, you may want to enhance them and make them look pretty before you put them up on the website so you can show them to everybody. This is a great meeting to come to, and Photoshop Elements, the stuff you learn in this meeting, will work both on Windows and on Mac as well.
Excellent.
So come on out. Enjoy yourself. It'll be between 3 and 5 p.m. Come an hour early. We have a Genius table open, and it's always welcome to have you folks out. It's going to be a great time at the Mac group meeting.
And you'll find more information on that, by the way, if you go to our Facebook page. Internet Advisor has a Facebook page. And like us, get on there, and you'll find out about events like that as well as on our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Guys, let's go back to the lines. And by the way, the phone number again, 800-859-0957. And remember, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask, and you have a unique opportunity right now to get on the phone with us, and we'll get those answers for you. All right, here we go. Let's talk to Art from Pinckney. Art, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing so good it isn't funny. I wanted to wish you guys a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Yep, and I got a problem with some software that I bought from a major big box store.
Okay.
And I installed it and put the codes in. Mm-hmm. Had to be on the internet to do that.
Yep.
And they told me that the software was not to be used in the United States, and I was in the United States.
Really?
This was sold to you at a retail outlet here in the United States?
Yeah, I bought it from Costco.
Okay, okay.
Wow.
And I bought this is Kaspersky.
Yes. Okay. Kaspersky is a reputable piece of software.
But they're located outside the U.S. and there could be different versions. That's true. But I don't know why Costco would get a hold of it. Maybe somebody made a mistake.
Yes. Yeah, sounds like someone made a mistake. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is, in order to make it work, you've got to jump through a bunch of hoops. I mean, more than I have time for.
I got you.
So how do you get your internet service? Do you go to Comcast or AT&T?
No, I go through Verizon's cell phone, kind of.
Oh, okay.
Cell modem, mm-hmm. which I'm going to get rid of pretty soon. Because I only get about 10% of what I pay for.
Okay, so
are you trying to figure out how to get it properly installed? Or are you trying to get it removed?
I want to try to get it removed, and I go to the control panel. Mm-hmm. Use the remove.
Yeah.
And I go through all the process there, and it automatically kicks it back on again.
Like most antivirus providers, Kaspersky has a Kaspersky removal tool, just in case they're damaged. So Norton has it, McAfee has it, AVG has it. So what I did is, on a whim, because I've never found the tool. I mean, I've never used the tool, but I went to Google and said, Kaspersky removal tool. You know, and a lot of times when you do things with Google, if you know how to phrase things, properly, like removal tool, and you just put a name in front of it. Norton removal tool, Kapersky removal tool. So sure enough, I typed in Kapersky removal tool, and right on the Kapersky website, under support.kapersky.com, was an article number 1464, and it talked about, here are the Kapersky removal tools for the 2010, 2011, and 2012 versions of Kapersky.
Okay.
So anyways, you download the tool, and it will supposedly remove all the Kapersky Lab software from your computer. They even provide a little video or flash tutorial that tells you how to use the tool.
Okay.
So that's one thing. And so you should download the tool from Kapersky. It's under, like I said, it's a Kapersky removal tool. The next thing is, okay, what are you going to be using for antivirus software if this doesn't work? After you remove this.
I'm still with Microsoft.
Good. I'm sorry, what version of Windows were you running?
I'm running XP on that computer.
Yeah, well. Okay, so you are running XP.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think, Cal, maybe it's Gary, AVG and Avast, one of those doesn't support Windows XP, and I forgot which one it was. They stopped supporting it.
Really?
So,
I thought they both did, so I'll have to look.
Yeah, you may want to. When you go to our website, you can download AVG or Avast. They're both free. But when you get to the website, it'll show you what version of Windows it supports. Okay?
Okay.
You know, because I think at that version, if you download, you could download Microsoft Security Essentials, and it'll certainly run on Windows XP. But it's a very stripped down version of Windows XP. I'm sorry, okay. It's a very stripped down version of the security suite.
All right.
So I would recommend the other two tools in this instance, Avast or AVG. And you get to those, and I have the links for them on InternetAdvisor.net. And if you go to our toolbox at the top there, you'll see that the links to free software.
Great stuff up there. By the way, I was distracted with something else here, guys. Did we talk about Microsoft Security Essentials?
Yes. Okay. Well, he's running Windows XP, and it's really not...
Oh, yeah, it's not built for that.
No, it's really not built for that.
Okay. All right. Does that help you, Art?
Yeah, well, hey, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, please do that. Yeah, give it a go. See if that helps to remove it. And then after that, there are lots of great other resources.
Yeah, because the Kapersky removal tool doesn't rely on the Windows ad remove programs.
And AVG does run on Windows XP Service Pack 2.
Okay, good.
You have to make sure you
However, it may be time for you to move up. Now, not necessarily to Windows 8, but to Windows 7, certainly.
Yeah.
Because you'll get rid of a lot of the problems that you're encountering here. And it's a great system. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, our phone number again, 800-859-0WJR or 800-859-0957. Now, by the way, I'm telling you, some of you folks are listening and saying, gee, I didn't know you folks were on at this time or that I could call in. But yes, this is a unique opportunity we have. The sports schedule is cleared and we're able to open up our phone line so you can get your call in right now.
You know
we can talk with you.
And you know what, Foster, I had an email question. Someone emailed me a question, and this happens sometimes. They're having an Outlook issue with one of their internet service providers, and it's just so, it'd be so convoluted, I'd have to write a 3-page reply, you know, because, you know, how to rebuild a mail profile, how to copy down the other mail.
I saw the mail go back and forth.
I says, I really can't help you with this. But they did ask, you know, well, maybe it's a corrupt personal folder. And if they're listening to the show, and I'll reply to an email later about this, you know, Microsoft does provide a tool for Outlook that's called the scan PST file. So Outlook stores its personal folders as a PST file, personal storage.
Right.
And Microsoft makes a tool, but they do not make an icon called PST or Inbox Repair Toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
So the file name is actually called scanpst.exe. So if they search their computer, Windows 7, for scanpst.exe, then they can launch that utility that Microsoft provides, and it will attempt to fix and repair damaged Microsoft Outlook.
What operating systems is that available on?
It's available on all versions of Windows. All the way from
all
versions of Office 97 all the way to Office 2013.
Okay, so if you're having problems with your Outlook file, that's a great one to run, and it will take a look at the...
It'll scan your PSTs.
Scan your PSTs for you. Great, we'll be back in just a moment. Jerry will be with you in just a moment, and the rest of you. Phone lines open, 800-859-0957. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Our homepage is internetadvisor.net. A wealth of information there on the content of our program today. And also, you have links to past podcasts. And Ed, you mentioned the toolkit that's there. And over the years, that's probably one of the most popular places on our homepage. It's where Ed has put all of his advice over the years he's gathered for people. And lots of great links in there to free software that can help you.
Yes. And the other thing that's really cool about InternetAdvisor.net is that there's links to all the guests that we interview on the show, information about them, the subjects we talked about, just wonderful, just a virtual cornucopia of information.
And as the program goes on, very often people will get, like, for instance, when we had the girls in on the first hour talking about web design, it gave me a link to the final web pages, and you can take a look at them there. It's a lot of fun. All right, let's go back out to talk with, Ed from Royal Oak. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
All right, I've got one of these Razer smartphones and had it for about a year. Now, besides itself, stopping and enforcing me to reboot it, you know, probably consistently, three, four times per day, dropping in the middle of searches, dropping in the middle of phone calls. The other situation is that I'm attempting to upload some apps, very, very simple. Uh-huh. One is called Teleprompter. The phone just keeps, what do you call it when that little circle keeps going around? It's
We call it, on Mac, we call it the beach ball of death, you know, but it just means that you're not going anywhere. It's chasing its tail. So you bought this, where did you buy this from? It was one of the...
It's kind of like a franchise of Verizon, maybe one of those discount outposts that Verizon, you know, licenses to sell their product. And, they're very, very high-pressure sales oriented, and then not no follow-up service. And then the tech people at Verizon are either, you know, give you a smiley face or just stumped by the problem. So I figured that, you guys come across as the ultimate gurus of electronics savvy, so that's why I'm, you know.
Okay, I got you. Okay, Cal, you had a thought for him.
Well, let's go down the list real quick. Number one, do you have all the latest updates to the operating system on that Droid phone?
Yeah, I've got the latest one. It's the ice cream sandwich. So there's one due out, you know, probably a few months.
Okay,
but, you know.
Okay.
Well, the other thing is, have you tried to do a reset by removing the battery from the phone and letting it sit for about 5 minutes, and then put the battery back in and power it up?
Okay, this is a battery that's welded to the phone, so there's no removal. Yeah. I would have to pull out the memory card.
Oh, it's like an iPhone, yeah.
You're right. It is like an iPhone.
I thought only iPhones did that.
No, it's like the Windows phone too. Yeah. On my Windows phone, I couldn't do that either.
Okay. The other thing is the automatic updates on my Razer, and I don't have a Razer. I have a different Android, an older Motorola. But the first thing that the techs at work who use these things more than I do is to disable all automatic updates. I don't need to have all my apps updating themselves 4 times a month or 7 times a month because, you know, I just don't want to receive all those apps because those free apps always update their advertisements, and I don't want them to update the advertisements. If I have a book reader that's free, I'm going to use that book reader, and I don't need to update it. I don't update it. Hmm. I don't want to see any more ads.
So
the other thing is the, which applications do you have running? One of the problems that can cause your unit from rebooting all the time when you're updating is because you have so many apps running in the background. So it sounds like you've gone to the Verizon desk or the tech support desk. Have you viewed which applications are actually running in the background and you've checked to see which ones you can disable?
Oh, okay. So those are the questions that they fail to recognize, and that's something they should address. What's running, operating in the background?
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, if you go into the settings on an Android system, you'll have manager applications usually. And then this is the problem Foster and I were talking about, I guess the last two times we came into work together, is that every flavor of Android, every vendor puts their own interface on it between ice cream sandwich or anything else. So they've changed where you go on the phones. So unlike in Windows or an Apple device, I can say just go into settings and go here.
Yeah.
On these Android phones, you have to go into settings, and on one flavor, you have the ability to go into manage applications. On the next flavor of Android, you may not have manage applications. It may be something else. And on my Android phone, which is Ice Cream Sandwich, I have the ability to go under manage applications, and I can look under applications that I've downloaded, the ones that are in my media area, or the ones that are already running. And when I go into the ones that are running, I have the ability to kill them and stop them from starting automatically. You know, so just like a Windows or, yeah, right, or a desktop or a laptop, these applications...
Like with MS Config on a PC.
Or Control-Alt-Delete and bring up your task manager, you can find out which applications are currently running.
Okay, good. So
to
you can
me,
do that.
It really sounds like your phone's running out of memory.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
one of the things I have on mine is called, and I have it on the homepage, look for an application called Task Kill. I think that's what it's called. It looks like a little Android, I think it's Android Kill.
I can't, you know, I can't do that because I can't download any more apps. It won't do that even. Yeah.
Well, you could hook it up to your phone. You could download it onto your PC and supposedly copy it to your SD drive on your phone and then run it. Launch it.
You know, how many apps do you have?
My guess is I got about 6 pages, and there's, what, 30 a page?
Oh,
so,
wow.
Well, I mean, so that's how many came on my phone. Don't you use?
How many? I'll tell you what, I probably go to 80% of them over a period of month. I use the map and the Google Earth, like, you know, sometimes I'm, you know, desperate for that. But,
okay.
If there's any that you can... delete the ones you don't use.
Or disable, you know.
Or disable.
And I, for instance, I found that on my iPhone that it was no longer, I was able to not load anything more on because I have so many apps.
Right.
So then it tells you, disable a bunch of things. Like if you have podcasts that are downloaded, disable the podcast. Or just get rid of apps that you really are not using anymore.
And most people don't use all the apps they have.
And Ed, you've got something there?
Yeah, the application was called Advanced Task Killer. And then basically what you can do is you download that. And there may be a way of installing it without actually downloading it. You could probably hook it up, tether your PC or Mac to your Android, and then copy the application to it.
Okay, what's the first name again?
It's called Advanced Task Killer.
Now, Ed, by the way, I will be uploading the podcast of this program, the recording of this program, with your questions and some of the things Ed's come up with on Sunday night. And you can download that and listen to the last hour so that you can hear that again.
Yeah.
So don't go off the side of the road trying to take notes on this.
Because just like any other, like a PC, a rogue application that's not following the rules and is running away with memory will make a device crash, whether or not it's Windows, a Mac, or a phone.
Yeah.
Foster, what did you do when you couldn't download any more apps? You got rid of some of the
apps? Well, it gave me the option to turn off podcasts. So I turned the podcasts off. Right. They won't load on anymore. And then I have to go in. If I want to put anything in, I have to get rid of apps.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of them I don't use. I just pile them on.
Right. Like most people do. And they find that they don't use them all.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought these Android devices, you just stick a memory card in it and you can add more stuff to it.
Well, that's the problem.
Then you have to do that.
By default, people are running the applications from their phone memory. You have to, a lot of times when you install these applications, you have the ability to run these. Would you like to run this from your SD card instead? You know what I'm saying?
So,
But Cal's right. You cannot expand the system memory on what's running in the background. You can expand the storage memory.
The other thing I would check at is who do you have the contract with? If you can, get the phone back to them. It doesn't work. And try to get another one. Part of the moral of this story may be you really need to deal with the mainline dealers, like the Verizons or the AT&Ts or the T-Mobiles or whatever. Because when you deal with the discount ones, you may run into this.
Or move those apps over to some other storage.
Yeah, I mean, he could back those up. Like I said, tether to his PC or Mac, drag all the data and photos off of it onto his PC. Almost every one of these phones has a factory reset capability. Google it. How do I factory reset a Razr? Motorola was great to say, you know, if you press this button, depress the one key, sit and spin, you know, and then power whatever, it will do a factory reset it back to factory settings.
Yeah.
You lose everything.
There's the other thing called the hard reset. Cal, I know on the iPhone you can do a hard reset, which is where you hold three things down. I think it's the home button, the power key. I think you hold those down.
It's just a home button and a power key.
You just hold those down, and it'll just completely shut it down. And and shut everything down and then come back up again.
But that the hard reset doesn't erase your data.
No, it doesn't erase your data. And but one of the things it sounds like with Ed, and maybe other people out there having these problems, is Gary, two things, Ed. You said, you know, we may be running on the memory that's on the phone rather than on the SD card.
Right.
And if you were on an SD card, you'd have more room to play. And then the other thing, Gary, you were saying is you may simply need to get some of those applications out
right,
of there.
Or turn off those running applications.
Or turn off the running applications. And Ed, sounds like you've got a ton of them there. So thank you very much for your call. I hope we helped you. And for the rest of you out there, we still have some time. 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. Time for you to get your phone calls in. Steve from South Lyon will be with you shortly to help you. And for the rest of you out there, got a little more time. Time for your call at 800-859-0WJR. As one of our listeners said, we've been having so much fun here. If I was having any more, I'd be twins. I want to thank Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson, my partners here in studio, for helping out with questions here. And behind the glass, Annie Nichols and Rick Lusinski, thank you for the great job you do. Don't forget, folks, by Sunday night after the program, we will post the podcast, and you'll be able to hear all 3 hours of this. And if you are one of our affiliate stations where you get, you know, maybe 1 hour or 2 hours of the program, you can hear the whole shoot and match by going to internetadvisor.net and downloading it there. All the links there as well for our program. And by the way, Cal, you had a follow-up, I think, to, was it to the last question about the Android phone?
Yeah, that was yeah. Ed, yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, it was Ed both phone. Of us, actually, if you want to go that route. And you caught me off guard.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't looking at it at the time. I was looking at another problem for me. Oh, here it is, hard reset. If you go to the Verizon website, or better yet, if you go into Google and do a search on hard reset for a Droid Razr, it'll take you right to the Verizon website. And it has a process that tells you exactly how to do a hard reset. Now, first line caveat, listen carefully. Make sure you back up all your data prior to doing a hard reset, because it's going to erase the phone completely.
Okay.
So if you follow the procedure out there, and it's really simple, it's about 7 steps to do it, you can do a hard reset of that phone, clear it all out, and then it will load up with the current operating system.
Yep. What I thought was cute, and I didn't realize this with these Razrs, is that it has restore points. So if you were to do a default reset on these devices with their procedure, it just resets it to the previous known good configuration, like a Windows device. You actually have to go in, delete the restore points, and then do it. And when you do that, and then hit the reset, and then when you hit that, it goes to a factory default and relays, but it also removes all your data.
Great. All right, let's go to Steve in South Lyon. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you, Steve?
Hi, Foster. I'll quickly explain what the situation that I have. I have been working on my webpage for the last literally 3 months and tens of hours. Hundreds of hours, it seems like. Mm-hmm. But I'm building it through HostGator with what is called their base kit. The challenge that I'm having is it's an online application, and the learning curve is extremely high for me. I'm moving icons around, and they're not going where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I run an iMac 3.06 with, I think I've got 12 gigs of RAM, and I just realized I'm wondering if I can just build this in iWeb, because I'm so familiar with all the iMac applications. I've got all my media right there on my Mac, from iPhoto to mm-hmm. I run Logic 9. I have iTunes right. downloaded, and I have a lot of audio files, a lot of video files.
Mm-hmm.
I have not published my site yet, mm-hmm. but I own the site name. And
okay.
And my question for you guys is, is it difficult to build this in iWeb, but then publish it through HostGator, just build it in iWeb, and send them that web site built in iWeb?
Okay, hang on. Cal?
I don't know if it's easy to import it in there, but my real concern, and I'm checking on this right now, because I thought iWeb was shut down and it's not being used anymore
mm-hmm.
since they created iCloud.
Yeah.
And so I think you can't do it anymore. But what I would like to suggest to you that you may want to take a shot at that might work really well for you, go to the Adobe website and download Adobe Muse. That's spelled M-U-S-E. And I believe they'll allow you to do a free download, and you can use it for about 30 days.
I used it to create a website for someone, and I was able to get it up and going like in an evening, really, really easily.
Huh.
So you may want to take a look at that. That might work for you, but it was my understanding, I believe,
I heard the same thing.
Supposed to go away when iCloud was upgraded, yeah. And it's not there to be used anymore.
Well, I just upgraded to 10.8.2, and my iWeb is,
First of all, I think you can, iWeb is still there, and I think you can use it. I'm trying to find out as well. It looks like it is. So
yeah, I mean, and any web development site that's worth its salt would allow you the ability to import these things and even import existing websites as an example. I mean, copying is a form of flattery, basically, right? I mean, yeah, what's the terminology for that?
Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
The only problem is that some of these sites, if you want to use their proprietary software and they have something in particular that you want, some feature or function that you want, if you don't build the entire site in it, it'll be hard to make the two work together.
Well, I can just, I don't have to copy the exact layout. I'll just build a thing from scratch because I've got all my material. It seems like when I would go to like an on-web audio player and then take the HTML copy and paste it in there, and sometimes it shows, sometimes it doesn't. With all my stuff in my Mac, I can just go and get it and put it in, and it's there. And
iWeb is still supported out there, and yes, I would go ahead and give it a try that way. You've got all your media right there in front of you. You got the tool. What you got to lose? I mean, go ahead, set it up, give it a shot.
Now, I'm looking at one website that says there are some indications that it may not be around for long because iWeb wasn't updated in iLife 11, iWeb is not being sold on the App Store, and iWeb doesn't come pre-installed on the new Apple computers since the release of OS Lion anymore. So that's just one site that's saying these are hints that you may be creating something in a piece of software that's going to go away.
Well, that's the reason why I told him to go with Adobe Muse. Yeah. That way he can create it in that tool, and he can take it and put it anywhere
and
he wants.
And you work
and
with the resources. You're right. Steve, you've got a whole bunch of resources right now on your computer that you wouldn't have to then run around and chase anymore, okay?
Well, if they do discontinue it, I mean, I still would have the application to use on that particular Mac. Is that correct?
You'd still have the application. Yeah. The only thing that you'd have to find out for sure is whether or not you could export an HTML web file from that application that could be used on any website.
So here's a thought that you could do. If you look at and just go to Google and search for iWeb versus WebGator, there are all sorts of sites that are going to help you move from iWeb to HostGator.
Okay.
Right, and it's possible that by the time after you get the data in there and you got your website built the way you want to, you'll have a firmer grasp by the time iWeb goes away. You'll have those tools or the experience and the website already built, then you won't have to worry about iWeb anymore. It'll already be built, and plus you've had the experience.
Okay, Steve. Hey, thanks for your call. I hope we've given you some other alternatives to that. Let's see if we can wrap up with one more call. Jeremiah and Adrian, I believe, right?
Yep.
How you doing, sir? What can we do for you?
I got a question about an iPad. I have a new iPad 4, and I have wireless internet in my house, and it recognizes my wireless signal, but even though I have it checked to automatically log on to the wireless, it won't connect on its own.
How old is your router?
The wireless router?
Yes.
It's quite a few years old.
That's the problem. What you need to do is you're going to have to upgrade that router because the protocols on that iPad aren't going back that far to be able to talk to that router. I've seen this happen many, many times.
Hmm. Yep, and I ran across that at our house too. And you could still buy a router that's compatible for between $30 and $100
Oh, yeah. They're
very easily.
Right. They're very, and some good ones that are out there by Cisco. I'm trying to think of Linksys.
Linksys
is the old brand name for that. So, Jeremiah, I hope that helps you out. And got a couple people in here who've had that same problem they've tackled. Thanks so much for being with us. Folks, thank you so much for being with us here on the Internet Advice. It's been a delight being here for this supersized program. Once again, on Sunday night, we will be loading this podcast, and you can hear the entire 3 hours or pick the part of it that you'd like to tune back into and find some more information. Otherwise, go to internetadvisor.net, and you will find all the show notes and the links to take you to the different places, the different people we've been talking about. Thank you so much. Hey, have a great holiday season out there. And we will see you once again very soon this next week with the Internet Advisor and more information and help for you to get around the Internet.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998 we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at internetadvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help. You. So don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.